This is our fifth day. And it's the fifth day of what? Let's get more specific. So what? Let's move beyond the physical. Let's get into the let's get into the spiritual realm of it. Sincerity and truth. Whose sincerity? Mine? Yours? Or the Father's? When you think about sincerity, we as human beings, we have a tendency to think about being sincere about doing things. How sincere was the Father to carry this out? All the way to the death of his Son. And he said, Yahshua said, "Thy word is truth." He's telling his, talking to his Father, but for her to be heard. So truth comes from where? From the Father. Has nothing to do with telling a lie and not telling a lie. It has to do with what's called truth. And when God grants you his truth, something's going to transpire when it reaches its fullness. What is it going to transpire? Okay. We are in the process of being sanctified. This is what we'll talk about this a little more today. And when we begin to take in what's called unleavened bread or sincerity and truth, we're taking in that which is from the Father. The Father has granted us that we partake of it. And when we have finished the completion of his process that he is doing, because it says, Apostle Paul says this, he, the Father, has begun a good work in you, and he, the Father, will finish the good work. And sometimes in our world, we sometimes don't really picture the Father really doing that much. We kind of picture that is Jesus doing all the work, or some other being doing a bunch of work. But the truth is, it's always the Father who's doing it. He set this up. There is no plan B. No one's taken over his job. No one has taken over his responsibility. No one's taken over his plan. And no one has taken over his creation. He still is in charge of his creation. And today, we have a new banner up there that some of you have seen. And some of you, it's brand new. All right? It's the banner that has to do with what's called the wave sheaf offering. And in the book of Leviticus, we won't be going there today, but in the 23rd chapter, verses 9 to 15, it talks about an Omar being raised up and given unto the Father in order that he will give us favor. All right? So, years in the past, some of you have been around, I used to take some, grass and do the waving, And last year, I brought the grass in the car, and I came and I said, I can't bring that in. Because you know why? And I told my wife yesterday or the day before, those are tares. Why would I want to give God raise him up there? So I don't have. Next year, God willing, we're going to try to see if we can't plant some barley seeds just enough that we can grab them. Of course, we have to make sure they don't turn the seed before they fall. Because Harvey falls, barley falls pretty quick. So today, I'm going to do something a little bit different to commemorate the. We'll talk about this the wave sheaf offering in a minute. Since I don't have a the grain of. I do have to have it in a bowl, though. It's already been on the threshing floor. Hopefully next year it won't be on the threshing floor.
Don't wait.
No, just hold it up there. Baruch Ata Avinu Eloheinu. We thank you and glorify you, Eternal Father, for Orejit Kazir, for the first fruits, for the very first of all of the things for all mankind. And Father, that first fruit is your Son, that you have accepted to find favor for us. We thank you and give you great praise and praise you in the name of your Son, Yeshua Mashiach. Amen. We started out on the first holy day talking about sanctify unto me the firstborn. Now, in the physical world, we do have what's called the firstborn male, and he is to be set aside, or he is to be sanctified. And sometimes in our world, remember, everything that God has done on a physical plane reflects something of the spiritual plane. There is a spiritual, quote, firstborn, and then there is the physical firstborn. I'll give you an example. The Messiah is known as the second Adam, not the first one. But it's also known as the firstborn. And we'll go through that a little bit today. But to get back to here, Rashit, or Reshit Kazir. Kazir means harvest. And so when he says, when you have in your land, you're going to move, I'm going to move you to, when you, this is the plurality of Reshit Kazirchem, means your harvest. When you harvest yours, your very first harvest you do, you're going to do something with it. You're going to have the Omar. Wave sheaf means basically the Omar. A first one is going to be held, and the priest is going to raise it up to the, and it says to the face, before the face of, or in the face of Yahuwah, in order that he will find, or he will give you favor. All right? It doesn't mean that he will be pleased with you, that he will bless you. It says that he will find favor in you. The very interesting Hebrew phrase to know that when something's put for his face to gain, you will have favor in his face. What we have here is the first, or the reshit of the harvest. And that's the first one. And if he accepts the first one, then you have been favored. So where does that put you today? Sanctify to me the firstborn. This is Exodus chapter 1, verse 13, verse chapter 2. And so we have gone this process, and there's 7 consecutive days that you are to be in the realm of being sanctified, or the firstborn in the time of Exodus, the firstborn being set aside for a reason, in order to sanctify them or put them to become kadosh, because that's what the word really comes down to be holy unto him. Later on, when you read more into the book of Leviticus, he took the firstborn, kadosh, the holy ones unto him, and then he replaced them with another group of people, right? So now we have a change here, and now we have a second thing that's coming up, which is also a picture of a different priesthood. And so we're coming up here, we're looking at these things, and they uses the word firstborn. You know what the firstborn word, verb comes from? first I want to go, before we go in there, I want to tell you something about a certain man by the name of Jacob, also known as Israel. And the 29th chapter, 48th chapter of Genesis, made a certain statement about one of his sons. And sometimes we just ignore that statement completely and go on past it and see, oh, that son was a lousy bum. But what is the function? What is the firstborn? And when we read it here from Israel himself, we could see a picture or we could have a vision of what the eternal creator of heaven and earth, the father of us all, saw and considered what his son was in his sight. It's the 48th chapter, verse 49th chapter, I'm sorry, 49th chapter, first, verse 3. And he says to Reuben, "Thou art my firstborn, my might, thou art a sheet of my strength, the excellency of dignity, and the excellency of power." Those are pretty strong words. Now, when you look at it and pace it, now remember, these are prophetic statements. They're not just statements. Not about Reuben and his family, but about someone known as the firstborn. And that's the function. That's the function of a firstborn to reach this elevation. Or that's what he was there for. Do you think that Adam, when God created him, that he was not to meet or to do those things and represent those things? Yeah, he was. Did he? No. We have a Messiah coming on later who did represent Adam, and he did fulfill the functions that Adam did not fulfill. So we look at those things, we have a parallel of what is physical, then we need to look and see, okay, on the spiritual realm, what is it all about? The word to be was born, called the firstborn, or born, firstborn person, comes from a verb meaning make early fruit. Something that's going to become early. And it springs out or it comes out. And so that phrase is also used when you're talking about, a lemon tree, an apple tree, an orange tree, tomatoes, anything that has a fruit and it's going to spring forth something. Oh, that first year is going to spring forth and going to make fruit. Something's going to be produced for a purpose. And so we look at the Messiah, and he is considered, we'll get to there in a minute, God willing, that he is considered the first fruit, first of the first fruits, something he's going to produce. Now, it's a physical thing on the physical plane, but on the spiritual plane, it means he's the one that reshits. He is the beginning of it. Not the end of it, just the beginning of it. And so during these days of unleavened bread and the wave sheaf offering, although Omar was raised up and blessed before and put before the face of God, and God accepted it for the favor, to have favor upon the very people, that first grain or that first wave of Omar presented to the face of the Creator of heaven and earth was not just grain, not just wheat, not just barley, but representing something that was to be in your favor and in my favor, and in this case, the favor of all of Israel. And so when they went into the land of Israel 40 years later, that's what they did. And then in that, back again to Exodus 13th chapter here, third verse is a very fascinating thing. And after he has said, "Sanctify unto me the firstborn," then Moses turns around and he says something. And sometimes we just kind of, I remember, I was coming out of Egypt, okay. No, he said something that's very, very important. I try my very best to listen to carefully all the words that are being said. And not just say it's just a phrase, it's just a saying, it's just a thing to be said. here, now Moses said something. And he said, remember this day in which he came out from Egypt, out of the house of bondage, for by the strength of hand, Yahuwah brought you out from this place. There shall no leavened bread be eaten. That's strange. Got you out. And then he says, no leavened bread shall be eaten. And we know it's for 7 days. Now, if you were back then, all right, and we said, well, the reason why they couldn't have leavened bread because they didn't get out there and they didn't get the yeast, they didn't have the sour milk, and they had no time, they're always running and running and running. That's not what it says. I mean, it does. There are points that does say that. But the real truth point is, this is a commandment for 7 days. You will not have unleavened bread for 7 days. Remember this day. What day should we remember? Well, it's the very first day, days of unleavened bread. And so it hammers into us to saying, oh, this is kind of odd, isn't it? I mean, we all had a physical Passover, right? And the next day, why can't you eat bread with leaven in it? Why? Because you can't make leavened bread? Because you don't have sourdough? You don't have a yeast? You don't have all that? Well, you need to go get it, right? But he says, you shall not do this for 7 days. And expects to you last holy day that it is God who is going to do something. Why he wants unleavened is not just because of sin and transgression and iniquity, which Apostle Paul brings out, but when you take it in physically, you are asking your Father, your Creator of heaven and earth, to fulfill in you sincerity and truth. Because you know why? Human beings don't have it of and by themselves. It has to be given. How often do you pray for God to give you truth? Quite often, probably throughout the year. And when you ask God to give you the truth, it has to come from what He says. Not what you hope He says, not what you'd like for Him to say, or not that you hope that He says this, or hope He does that, but He just does it. So in these days, we have to take a look and say, what's going on? 7 days you shall eat it. Verse 12, thou shalt set apart unto Yahuwah all that open the womb, every firstling that is male, which thou hast coming of a beast shall be Yahuwah's. And in verse 15, he's talking about the son, saying, why do you do this? Why do you do this? And the father's to say, and it came to pass that when Pharaoh would hardly let us go, that Yahuwah slew all the firstborn. Wow. You remember what it said there in Genesis, the 29th chapter, verse 3? He wiped out strength, integrity, excellency, honor, name it. It is gone. And when that happened to Egypt, it strikes you to realize the nation was definitely over with. It ceased to exist. And I really thought about that, and I says, and he said, this is the reason why I redeem the firstborn. Why I do this. Go to 1 Corinthians. Yeah, we'll move the New Testament right away now. Yeah, get in there. You know, 1 Corinthians We're going to go to chapter 10. Remember, there are, I can use this carefully word myself here, different times when a firstborn come about. In fact, firstborn comes about in every generation. So it's always a firstborn, right? It always will be the firstborn, and it doesn't come once, it comes several times. And when you look at the Word of God, there is a certain point of spiritualness that there is a period of firstborns or firstborn ones. In a particular case, though, we're going to talk about this one right here, Reshit, Kazer, the first of the grain. I explained to you last year, if you remember, and when we went through this year, but when God, in a sense, harvested the barley from Egypt, took it out, and the people spiritually became the harvest. You don't think that's true? Now, didn't Yahshua use grain and wheat as a symbol of His Word being cast out and to be harvested in the latter days? In the latter days, what will dominate the harvest? The tares will dominate it. There'll be more tares by a huge margin before the final harvesting. And much like ancient Israel and Egypt, the tares were harvested first, symbolically speaking. The firstborn of animal and man was harvested, quote, quote, you understand what I'm saying, first. Then he came and he harvested all the house of Israel and some also that were with them that were not of the house of Israel. That's not ordinary. That's a planned thing that God has in mind or had in mind. And so we come to the latter days and we talk about the harvest of the barley or harvest in the later on, what goes to the Pentecost or Shavuot, as a harvesting of the wheat. First, there's the firstborn or the first harvest, the first budding or the first group comes from barley. And there's a second first group of wheat. Different plant, different story, different reason, and different analogy for different purposes. He says here, moreover, brethren, verse 1, I do not want you to be unaware that our fathers were under the cloud and passed through the sea, and they were baptized into Moses in the cloud and in the sea. We'll talk about that more specifically coming Monday. But I want you to get a little bit of picture here where Apostle Paul is bringing in a story or a picture of what it's all about. And they all ate the same spiritual food. Oh, really? What did they eat? What did they eat? Unleavened bread. Unleavened bread. That's what they ate for 7 days. On the seventh day, they still ate, and they passed through, and they became kadosh unto Yahweh. Now, so when we think about what is unleavened, and to rephrase myself again, it is truth. It is sincerity. That's what you are to take in during this period of time of your life, as long as you live. Bring it in, take it in, and accept it. That is the spiritual truth. The spiritual bread is not some kind of manna coming down. I'm sorry. It was unleavened bread. It was sincerity, and it was truth. Do you understand so far what I'm talking about? I hope so. These times of days of unleavened bread that we are in now, the physical portion that we are doing, it will come to a completion. And when it comes to a completion, and this is the reason for it to come to a completion, it doesn't mean it's going to end. It means it's completed. It means that the task that the Father has implemented in His plan and our lives will be completed when He is finished. Now, we talked about this thing of, 7,000 years? Well, you know, you have to go through the 7,000 years before it really completely is completed. A lot more yet to go, all right? When it is finished and when it is completed, then there's a wonderful chapter in the book of Revelation that talks about the Father coming down. And in that huge, giant, cubic square thing, that's massive. And there are doors. You go in and you go out. You go in and you go out. You go in and you go out. And there is one there that illuminates. And it says, the one who illuminates is the Father. And then it says, the Lamb is the light. Where did He get the light? From one that illuminates it. The one who puts it, turns it on, lights it, we say. So the Father will be there. How many of you are familiar with, what's that television program many years ago? It was something to do with Star Trek. You know, and this is, by the way, the program was written by a Jew. Remember this thing called the Borg or the Gorg or whatever, the big, huge, square, cubicle thing? You know where he got that idea from? Book of Revelations. You will be simulated, you know, negative, negative thing, you know. It's kind of a comical thing, but nonetheless, that's where he got his idea from. It is futile, you know. Well, in truth, with God, it is futile to fight against Him. You're not going to win. However, they made a joke of it, all right? But the truth is, where are you going to be when this is completed? You're going to be where the Father is. Right? You're going to be there. But in order to get there, we won't go to Revelations today. There's certain things that He will not permit or allow in that cubicle building or housing or place of living. And the very first one He listed was the fearful will not enter in. Kind of interesting statement, right? So when we go through the days of unleavened bread, there's a lot of things that you and I and all of us are faced with. Not just during these days, but in our life all the way to the end. Some things are fearful to go. Not about jumping off a bridge. But fearful in walking this way. That you become, or one can become, frightened. Because you lose family. You lose friends. You lose a job. You lose a career. You lose everything. And all you got left is unleavened bread. One of the hard things, you know, Apostle Paul, we'll talk about it again later, but He said, do you know why you get baptized? Well, why do you get baptized? Do you think the people in ancient Israel really wanted to go through that place? Well, they saw it as a great miracle, right? Oh, great, 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 glory, 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 hallelujah, right? Well, no, they were afraid. And what did God say to them? Go that way. In the water? Yeah. Go. And they went. Now, you know, kind of put yourself in their shoes for just a half a second. And, you know, we've had Sesame to Bill have this big, huge picture. But just think about this for a moment. What would you think about this tonnage of water on your left, a tonnage of water on your right? What would you think? Is it going to come down? It did come down. It did come down. And now they, of course, will go to their journey. They're going to be going on to find out what the commandments of God are. But nonetheless, he said, do you not know why you got baptized? You were baptized in Yahshua. You're baptized because of Him. If it wasn't for Him, baptism of sin, baptism for your death, baptism for no longer walking in maliciousness and wickedness has no value. So when we get baptized, we're taught that for after. We didn't think about that, but we could look back on it, as Apostle Paul is teaching the Romans people here, people in Rome, that you have now something. You're clean. And it wasn't for the Messiah dying and you representing and going in with Him on it, you would not be where you're at today. And the Apostle Paul talks about, do you know not that who you give yourself to obey, you will obey, you respond to. It's in Romans 6, chapter, verse 16. In our world, in our lives, it's relatively easy for us, because we are human, we're flesh, to justify our weakness. I am just flesh and blood. I don't have the strength, the internal strength. I don't have the character. I don't have the fortitude. I don't have something I don't have to help me overcome what it is that God says, I don't want you to go that way. I want you to go this way. And you're saying, I don't think I can do that. And remember what Yeshua said? Narrow, very narrow, is this way. And, yes, it is hard. Not impossible. It is hard. Now, during these days of unleavened bread, when truth comes from the Father, sometimes we as human beings say, I'm not quite sure that I can do what He is requesting me to do. I'm not quite sure that I understand what He really, His will really is. I don't know if He really wants His will in my life over here, His will in my life over there, His will in my... Days of unleavened bread. Sincerity. When God grants sincerity, you think God is really sincere about your life? Do you think He really is very sincere about your life? He wants to give you something. What does He want to give you? His truth. His word. That you live by. And it's hard as human beings to live by every. Not just one and two, the second verse, the 14th statement, the 3,400th one, and ignore all the others. Every word. And I know that many of you have lost jobs, lost income, lost homes, lost family, lost loved ones. You have lost those things, and it was not easy. And you are sometimes very happy and pleased, though, in a different way, because you have something called truth. And you know what the truth is, that is the truth of the Father. What He says is true. And you live by it. Then there comes a really sorrow that starts building up inside of you. You start feeling sorrow for your family, your family members. And like everybody, you try to do your very best. Talk them into hearing it. And it can't happen. I'll tell you why it cannot happen. Because unleavened bread comes from the Father and comes from the Father only. He is the one that gives it. He is the one that provides for it. He is the one who's going to complete the complete sanctuary, the sanctification of you and the sanctification of me, and even the sanctification of your loved ones and your dear friends. Otherwise, there's no need for resurrection of the Messiah. Yet the Messiah doesn't need to be resurrected. But see, what do you have? You have hope. I'm really, the hope of the world is really kind of way out there. It's hard to understand. I'll tell my wife, the very really odd, when I say corrupt, thing that's going to happen to the world tomorrow, that is Sunday, is a complete picture of a mockery. And every preaching minister that I've ever heard does acknowledge it. But they say they don't do it for that reason anymore. They do it to glorify the Father and glorify the Son. However, the Son says, this is what? This is how we are to glorify my Father. Live by every word proceeds out of His mouth. And during these days of unleavened bread, if we take in and partake of and just really absorb His truth, we will become stronger. Now, His? How many of you, well, it's called the bread of affliction. Really, it is a bread of affliction when you compare it to the things of this world. They don't like the truth. The world, thus Paul, he said that in the 17th prayer, the book of John, 17th chapter, and that the world hates them, talking about his apostles, because I gave them your truth. Do you think the apostles, when it was all over with, and they finally realized the Messiah was, and the resurrection was there, they got glory, 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 hallelujah, and Pentecost came, and they got the Spirit, and all that, they never had an enemy? They didn't have people that despised them, wanted them dead? Oh yeah, they wanted them dead. They didn't like them. They hated them, despised them, didn't want anything to do with them. Well, I'm not an apostle, so I thank God that I don't have to face that problem. I want to go real quick now to Colossians. Book of Colossians, 13th chapter. Not 13th chapter. I'm saying the first chapter 1, verse 13. There's no 13 chapters in Colossians. Verse 13 of chapter 1. And here the Apostle Paul is talking about God, the creator of heaven and earth. And he said something about him. Break it into the whole thing. He, who, meaning God, hath delivered us from the power of darkness and has transformed us into the kingdom of his Son. You remember what the ninth plague was of Egypt? Darkness. Oh, that was just a coincidence. God just happened to, that's a good idea. I'll use that. No, he's telling there that you were in Choshech. Although Choshech, the darkness, did affect them because God kept them, delivered them out of Choshech. But Egypt was in Choshech. Choshech means darkness in Hebrew. So we're looking at this thing, and he said, now we know the Father's done this. And we also know that in whom we have redemption through His blood, the Messiah's blood, and the forgiveness of sin, who is in the image of the invisible Elohim, the firstborn of every creature. Here's where the Messiah is called what? The firstborn. Wait a minute. I thought the firstborn was, what's his name? He was killed. His brother killed him and his blood's on the ground. What's his name? Oh, Adam. No, it wasn't Adam. Who was it? I forgot who it was. I'm just making fun of the statement. You understand what I'm talking about. Wasn't he the first one? At least we get the impression he was. Wait a minute. No, he wasn't the first. Who was the first one? Oh, wait. It wasn't him. It was... Oh, no, it was his brother who was the firstborn. Wasn't it? Yeah. It was Cain, the firstborn, killed the secondborn. Wow. Do I got my story confused? Yeah. Well, not really. Not really. Who of the two was called righteous? Abel. So he is, in a sense, the first one that's been called that. What happened to Abel? He was killed. Wow. The first one, the first human being that was killed. Amazing. When you really stop and think about that, do you think that when the resurrection comes, that Yahshua is going to raise up Cain first, or going to raise up Abel first? He's going to raise up Abel first. And Cain's going to remain until a certain given period of time, and then something else will transpire. We'll not talk too much about that. We'll talk about the very firstborn. He is Yahshua is considered the firstborn. Okay, way back to the first harvest, the wave sheaf, the Omar being presented, or Rashid Karzir, the beginning, the very first. Now, what's so fascinating about this? That this wave sheaf wasn't not to be offered on the first day of unleavened bread. Did you notice that? It was to be offered later, sometime later, during the days of unleavened bread, but not on the first day. So Yahshua was killed on the 14th, then comes the 15th, which is the first day of unleavened bread. Oh, and Moses was commanded, now sanctify the firstborn. Okay, he started doing it. Behind who's the firstborn, and said to Messiah that they will be kadosh unto the Lord, or holy unto the Lord, be sanctified unto the Lord. Now, it doesn't show us there too much in the book of Exodus or Leviticus. Along comes the Messiah who... Just ask yourself a question. I've talked about harvesting, right? Was the Messiah harvested? Yeah, he was harvested. What happened? Of all of the harvest He was the first one to come up back into life. Were there any died before him? Who died before him? The prophets were slain, the men of God were slain before him, long before he died, and before he was slain. And so now, do you think that the only ones that are part of the firstborn are the ones that in the time of Yeshua? Or do you think it's way back during, maybe started with Abel? A just man killed. How many prophets have been killed? Jesus named off a lot of them, didn't he? Named them off a lot. They were slain. They didn't want to be heard. And Daniel went through one of the priests who was helping out David and his men. And Yahshua made mention of that person. Was he an unjust priest? No. A just one. A righteous one, but he got killed. So what I'm trying to tell you here is when the sickle is laid to the harvest, the tares are going to come down first. You will be there. You will not see it as though it is a great thing of pleasure. I do not personally, my personal inwardmost part of my being, I cannot picture the people of Israel in their homes with the blood on the doorpost, hearing an incredible cry and wailing and yelling and screaming. They could not hear it and said, "Glory, hallelujah, I'm glad they're all dead." No, I think it really, truly troubled them. And when the time of the end comes, I just want to kind of let you, my personal opinion here, I'm looking at the first fruit, the first one that comes through. The Messiah is the first one that comes from the dead. Yes, but a lot of people died before he did. But he's the first one to come back alive and remain alive. I believe, this is my personal opinion, Richard's personal opinion, I believe that when God brings down that sickle and starts slaying, not the house of Egypt, but starts slaying the tares, you're going to have a direct, emotional, heartfelt, and desire, not desire, but a heartfelt feeling of, this is devastating. Look what happened in Japan. I don't know, unless you just totally ignored it, says, "Oh, that's Japanese, that's their problem." But you stop and you say, "Oh, wow, they haven't even got the number together yet. They have a count they can count, but there's still, what, 20 or 30,000, 20 or 25,000 still unaccounted for? They don't even know who they are. They don't know where they're at. They're probably turned into fish food." I know that when I saw those things, I saw the devastation. That was just, I mean, that storm was coming. That stuff was coming so fast that there were the Japanese people in cars running, get that floor and that thing as fast as they can. You can't go 500 miles an hour on a car. It won't let you do that. And you saw it, and it just came and overtook them, and they were gone. That quick and that fast. Anyway, do you understand what I'm saying so far? I hope so. In Hebrews 12th chapter, just a verse or two, verse 23, the general assembly and the church of the firstborn. Here he calls the church of the assembly, or the assembly is the firstborn, but not the first of the firstborn. not the beginning of the harvest, not the beginning of that which brings forth fruit, because that's what that word in Hebrew, born, means, that which brings forth fruit early. Not late, early. I was in Hebrews chapter 12, and I just read 23, or going to read 23, which are written in heaven, and Elohim, the judge of all, and to the spirits of just men made perfect. In our world, how do we become perfect? Well, you know, my personal opinion, I'm saying to you, as long as we keep taking in unleavened, I don't mean physical unleavened bread. We keep requesting, God, grant me sincerity, your sincerity, not mine. I need to see your sincerity. You're so sincere that you laid your son's life down for me and for my friends and for my family. You were really sincere about it. You were serious about it. Very serious about it. And we have this famous statement, you know, God so loved the world that he did what? Was he really sincere about that? Or was he kind of saying, well, yeah, okay, I'll have to do this because it won't work any other way? No, because he loved the world so much. So on this resurrection time, we think about the Messiah. The resurrection time is a very interesting thing. And I just before, and I'm about ready to close now so we can have a partial break here. I want to read something here. Not the whole thing, just the front page. It's out of John, 5th chapter, verses 24 to 29. This is the hope that it should be within us all, as much as possible. Here Yahshua is saying, starting in verse 24 of John 5th chapter, most surely I say to you, he who hears my word and believes in him, the Father, who sent me, has everlasting life and shall not come unto judgment, but is passed from death into life. Most assuredly, I say to you, the hour is coming, and it's now, when the dead will hear the voice of the Son of Elohim, and those who hear will live. For as the Father has life in himself, listen carefully to this phrase, so he has granted the Son to have life within himself. Wow. And has given him authority to execute judgment also. Because the reason why he has the authority of making judgment is because he is the Son of Man. Do not marvel at this. For the hour is coming in which those who are in the graves will hear his voice, the Son of Man's voice. To the resurrection of life, to those who have done good, and those who have done evil or bad, to the resurrection of judgment or condemnation. So no matter how hard your world is, no matter how hard your life is, and it's going to get harder toward the end, I tell you this, what I feel very much inside of my mind, when the Messiah starts coming, it's going to be a great devastation, and it's going to be hard. It's going to be difficult. Keep beseeching your Father to keep on giving you that which is sincere and that which is true. Because the truth will set you free. We're talking about the Father Himself will set you free. If you absorb and take in the truth, you will have life. Any questions? I'm sorry, what? To give you His truth. Keep asking Him for truth. Ask for truth. Seek for truth. And knock for truth. That is what matters. Buying a new car is not what matters. It will perish. Wanting a new home with immaculate, it will perish. Wanting a nice steak dinner that's just the way you want it will perish. Wanting more hair in your head because you're going bald, it will perish. I'm sorry. So what do you ask God? That He will heal my big toe because it hurts? It will perish. It will not live on. The flesh will die. The disease you have will be gone. It will die. The disease you have will kill you. Yes. But what is it you really want from God? What is it you really want from Him? I hope you want truth. I know He will sincerely give it to you. Because I don't remember exactly, it's in the book, I think it's James. If any of you lack wisdom, ask, and He will give it abundantly. Now, when you exercise truth, when you exercise wisdom, you will have a great blessing from above. The earth, the world, people around about you will do what they did to the apostles. Hate you. Are you ready to be hated? Oh, but guess what happens? It's going to happen. Does that make sense to you? When I ask God for anything, I never ask Him for something that, I tell you the truth, I did in the past. A couple of things. One of them was, stupid me, I asked Him because my house was falling apart. And I said, Father, please, I'm asking You, let's give me a new home. Down came the wall. Oh. He says, why would I do that for when you don't take care of this one? Oh. I got the picture. So Daniel and I worked really long and pretty hard time trying to get that thing back together again. But I tell you, that was the biggest example of my world is, you're asking for amiss. You're asking it for to fill your own wants, your own desires, your own hopes, your own dreams, your own world. Hey, God says, don't you know? Down comes the wall. And it did come down. If I didn't have a couple of friends to help me figure out how to make an artificial wall, the house would have came down. But they taught me how to do that. So, you know, we got that, ripped out the entire wall and put a whole new wall in there. In fact, we put a whole extension of the entire house to it. But there was a man, I can't remember his name right now, but he used to attend with us. And he came over to visit us, and we were in the process of taking down this false wall. He looked, we started taking it down. He's ready to leave. He's ready, the whole place is going to fall down. But he stayed long enough, and behold, the house stood still. But it was just a funny thing. But what I'm saying to you is that, you know, those things that you ask, you know, God asked me, God, please provide for me with a lot of, you know, income, sufficient of income that I could be able to, buy a steak once in a while. It doesn't happen. Ask Him for His will. Inner please let me understand your will, and then help me to institute your will. This is what I believe when it says, ask, and you will be given it to you. Seek, and you will find it. Knock, and we'll open up for you. My world, what I see, unleavened bread. Sincerity and truth. God's truth, God's sincerity.